Greetings and welcome to Remedy Radio, the show that communicates solutions, helping you find, learn, and eventually teach remedies for life, love, liberty, and the achievement of both happiness and satisfaction for you and your loved ones. Removing your uncertainty and inspiring your curiosity.
Episode 420 of Remedy Radio is entitled, How Hemp Can Help Save Humanity.
Welcome to episode 420 of Remedy Radio with my special compatriots, Rob Christie and Adam Dodds. As you can see, we're real and we can really touch. So our special guests today are not really strangers to anyone who's familiar with any of our work, because we do so much work with these guys. But we have Jan Irvin of Gnostic Media and Richard Grove of Tragedy and Hope and Peace Revolution. And they're in Connecticut and California, respectively. So they've been kind enough to join us for this special 420 episode, which is called How Hemp Can Save Humanity. So I want to thank you guys both for joining us today. If you want to, you know, I think people are familiar with your stuff, so maybe we can just jump right into how can hemp save humanity?
What is hemp?
Yeah, why don't we start out with the definition of what is hemp? And hemp comes from the old English hanep, and it's soft, durable fiber for clothing, for paper, for fuel. You know, the plant can be used for fuel itself. The seed can be used for diesel oil, for lighting oil, for all kinds of good stuff. It's also good to eat too.
So it's a plant.
Yes, it is a plant, and I guess you could say that the more common slang term for hemp is marijuana.
And what's the difference between, like, this, the hemp that everybody is familiar with and marijuana?
Well, really, there's only a difference in how it's grown. there's technically three different types of hemp or cannabis. Cannabis sativa, cannabis indica, and cannabis ruderalis. And sativa and indica are the two most common. Sativa is typically what is known as, or what is used for hemp, whereas indica is typically used specifically for its medicinal qualities as well as in religious use. But sativa, as far as smoking cannabis or consuming cannabis is concerned, is typically much more flowery in aroma, much more uppity in feeling, less drowsy causing, whereas indicas are typically much more pungent in smell, a much heavier medicating feeling, typically used for pain and things like that. So there's a difference between those. The ruderalis type really doesn't have much THC at all. It's a Russian roadside strain, and it's often hybrid into indicas and sativas because of the short Siberian growing season. Growers can grow, short 3-foot tall plants that are already budding when it's crossbred with ruderalis in a month or two.
Nice. So, hemp's basically been this plant that's grown for thousands and thousands, if not longer, years on the planet. And somehow mankind has figured out a way to interact with this miracle plant and find all these uses for it. So either we're really smart, or it's really useful, or hopefully a little bit of both. But, Rich, what can you tell us about the history of its use?
Well, the history of hemp is the story of how humanity got here. And for as far back as we have records of something called history, where people write stuff down, that long and longer, there's evidence of humanity using hemp as a variety of, a multifaceted variety of plant. Where they were getting food, they were getting fuel, they were getting all sorts of nutrients that they wouldn't otherwise be able to store in seed form and then take and transplant other places, agriculture and cities build up around this. And being that it's one of the most useful plants throughout human history, and that it's never been found to be toxic to anybody. So nobody's ever died from smoking pot. Nobody's ever smoked marijuana and died, right? There's no recorded human history use of that in that way. So it's non-toxic. It's non-polluting. It's very useful. And so what you find is, because it's been so useful and because a lot of the history that comes to us today has been written down on hemp paper, and the people back in the day when this country was founded were wearing hemp clothes. And all throughout history, it's been used up until a certain point in the 20th century. So it brings about a lot of questions about, you know, as to what was discovered, what facts and logic were discovered that all of a sudden this became the bane of our existence and the origin and genesis of this multi-billion dollar war on a plant, which they characterize as a weed, which means, if I understand it correctly, that it has no useful purpose to mankind, and it's exactly the opposite. So I was very interested in figuring out how this all happened, and that is the story of hemp. You know, when you get into it, it's all throughout history. You can't see history without it, and if you're seeing history without hemp in the picture, you're not really seeing history.
Gotcha. Well, so you've got this whole concept where hemp had been, you know, even mandated by the government. Like, if you had land, you had to devote, you know, maybe up to 10% of it towards growing hemp. And, you know, if some of that happened to be the cannabis variety. You can see how you know, I've found lots of pictures and research of old, you know, tinctures and medicines, painkillers, all sorts of things that were extracted, essentially, from cannabis. And, so, like you said, there's this whole history of it being completely useful up until around the 1920s, 1930s, this alternative thread of almost like a racial, panic-based, fear-based assault against the plant started being propagated by these interests. I don't know if you guys...
The blacks and Mexicans started using marijuana. You know, in California, they started reporting the Mexicans using it around 1910, mm-hmm. And down in Louisiana, the black jazz musicians would smoke it, and they would say that the black musicians were hypnotizing white women to sleep with them. So, you know, this was back when it was illegal for blacks and Mexicans to step, you know, to step on white people's shadows and to look at white people in the face eyes, you know. So this is a really racist time. And then when they start using basically the white man's drug, suddenly it becomes outlawed. But, you know, as far as
racism be irrational in the first place. So what we see is irrationality taking hold on a population.
Right. And you know, and as far as its medical use, as far as I'm aware, I'd have to double check this, but cannabis the extracts were the number one prescribed medications until aspirin was invented in the 1880s, I believe. Mm-hmm. Possibly 1890s, but 1886, roughly, I think.
That's pretty interesting. Do you know, have you ever heard of cannabis being used for any other type of medicinal purpose?
Actually, when you think about it, I don't know if there's one that it's not used for. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it seems to help pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I think the biggest the biggest issue people have with it is it actually exposes. People say it doesn't motivate you and stuff, mm-hmm. like that. Like, there's all these negative things, but when you actually start to look at the research that, you know, when they did a, I remember watching something, they did a driving, you know, see what happened if people would get high and drive, and it turned out they became better drivers. So they're always trying to find a way to demonize it, make it seem worse than it is, and they can't. So they have to make, like, racial things.
Yeah. There was a book published in the 90s called Marijuana Myths, Marijuana Facts, and they point out, you know, all of these rumors out there about marijuana and laziness, and there's really no evidence necessarily that marijuana causes laziness. And the you know, the largest group of users is typically middle and upper class white males. And it's, you know, you find it throughout in the work area. And, you know, and basically it's, what it really comes down to is there's lazy people out there, whether or not they smoke pot. And if they smoke pot, maybe that, you know, they just,
it doesn't help their disposition.
Additionally lazy, you know, so, but motivated people are often motivated. And it, and like I was saying at the beginning, it also depends on what type of cannabis you're smoking. If you're smoking an indica at 10 o'clock in the morning, it's probably going to knock you out and you're not going to be able to get much done. But if you smoke a sativa, it may very well have the exact opposite effect, where you're running around cleaning the house, you know, getting work done, doing whatever you need to do. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Well, we'll talk more about this when we come back on this episode of Remedy Radio. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in a sec. All right, we're back with our special guests, Jan Irvin and Richard Grove. On this special 420 episode of Remedy Radio and Peace Revolution. So we were kind of talking about the history of hemp, and we were getting into why exactly it is illegal in the first place, after it seems to have been such a useful boon on humanity. So maybe we can get into, you know, why is it illegal today, and why was it made illegal back then, in the 30s?
You want to take the story of hemp, John?
Well, I guess so, huh? Well, basically, industrial hemp had been on a decline since the invention of the cotton gin. And, you know, because of the sheer amount of manual labor that had to be used to strip the fibers from the stalk of the hemp plant. And it wasn't until 1916, I believe, and I'm forgetting the guy's name off the top of my head, when the hemp decorticating machine was invented that actually sped up the process of producing hemp 100-fold, basically, and took the manual labor out of producing it. And at that time, popular mechanics and... In fact, let me see if I can...
I got the name of the guy. It's G.W. Schlichten is the inventor of the...
Yeah, G.W., exactly. G.W. Schlichten, and here's a photo of the decorticating machine here when it was first invented.
If and, I can interject for a second, what, you guys both appear to have a copy of the same book. What book is that? It looks real interesting.
Well, this is an old friend of mine's book, Jack Hare. And the reason why these two copies look different is Rich has the standard, probably 11th edition, and I've got the hardback all hemp edition here.
Nice. And you didn't you know Jack like pretty well and kind of worked with him for a number of years?
Yeah, I knew Jack for about 18 years until he died in April of 2010. He had suffered a stroke in September of 2009 up at a Oregon Hemp Fest, and he didn't come out of that. He had come down to my house in here in Southern California probably about 10 days to 2 weeks before the heart attack, and to talk about research and work, but that was really the last time we were able to speak, was when he was down here. He was supposed to come down 2 days before his heart attack again, but he never made it down.
But he's shared so much with the world through this book, and I wanted to point out that a lot of the information that we're presenting today is, you know, it's sourced out because of this book. We've been able to investigate all these other sources and then take it even steps further, so I just wanted to acknowledge.
And the book again is?
The Emperor Wears No Clothes by Jack Hare.
Yellen, do you have page 25, chapter 4, The Last Legal Days of Cannabis?
I do.
So you and I could just flip through and cover the major points of how it became illegal.
All right, yeah, well, sure, you know, and it had to do with the decorticating machine, Slitchin's decorticating machine, and it had to do with William Randolph Hearst owned a lot of timberland in northern Mexico, and he saw this decorticating machine as a threat to his paper empire, and so he sought to basically create a lot of fear propaganda regarding marijuana, cannabis. Actually, he's the one that really started promoting the word marijuana in the media, and that's where the word marijuana came from. Otherwise, it was known as cannabis or cannabis hemp or hemp before that. And so he used the opportunity of the Popular Mechanics article and the other information coming to light at the time. He used that as a reason to drum up fear regarding marijuana, and which is, marijuana is really just the flowers of the hemp plant, and there's a lot of misinformation out there that marijuana and hemp are different plants. It's not the same thing. That's not true. Hemp is cannabis sativa. Marijuana can very often be cannabis sativa, and you know, or cannabis indica, like I said earlier. But it's the same strain. It's all in how it's grown. You know, for marijuana, you separate out the males from the females. That's the primary difference. Whereas for hemp, they're grown close together. You don't take out the males and the females. You know, you don't separate them. And
George Washington wrote about that in his letters. There, if you do a search, George Washington in his letters talks about, I got back home too late to separate the male from the female plants, and the crops are ruined and stuff like this. So the important thing is, John's right. That's exactly what goes on, and it's been going on a long time.
See, here's the Popular Mechanics article, Billion Dollar Crop, which premiered in, what was the date on that? February 1938. And then there was another one, Popular Mechanics here, the most profitable crop, and profitable and desirable crop that can be grown. And that was from February 26, 1937. So basically, these two articles came out and set the stage for a revolution in the hemp industry, and it was posed to reestablish hemp as a major competitor against cotton again, which cotton had edged hemp out in the 1880s with the invention of the cotton gin and the removal. Another thing that they don't like to talk about in the history books, the manual labor for hemp production was extensive. So, in fact, a lot of the plantations in the South that grew hemp were using slave labor to produce the hemp. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a fairy tale that the slaves were picking cotton. That sort of, you know, certainly in some places they were, but that was not a major crop such as hemp was. Hemp was the larger crop, but when the cotton gin was invented, it removed most of the manual labor from it, and that didn't happen until the, you know, with hemp until the, you know, 19, what year was that again, Rich, that it was
I put it away, but it was 1930 was the letter that I was looking at.
Well, the decorticating machine,
he said it was 1919 before, but in the 1910s.
See, you know, here's colonial pictures of people cutting the hemp, and it was all done by hand. You didn't have tractors to come up and cut it. And here's an old wood cutting of the manual process required to, you know, to strip the fibers from the stalks and to prepare.
They were huge, right?
From it.
Yeah.
And they, you know, hemp can grow up to 18, 20 feet in 3 months. And, you know, in some places in Europe, it can grow even more. Like, there's areas in Serbia where they have some of the record growth rates in the world for in a very short period of time. But, you know, so it was really the invention of the decorticating machine, and then the Popular Mechanics and Popular Science announcing of that, and then a year later in 1937 was when the Reefer Madness propaganda started. So it was right about the same time these articles came out. And that was started by William Randolph Hearst and the Hearst newspaper company or empire. And so he was just out to protect his timber industries and, you know, keep his... basically what it comes down to is when you can cut down a bunch of forests, you don't have to pay a bunch of farmers and people and keep the, you know, the supply of resources local and domestic. You can just cut down resources from another country and import it basically free of charge, and that's what he was doing.
Yeah. All right, so you spurred a little thinking on my part, and I made a note. So you mentioned this guy called Eli Whitney and his invention, the cotton gin, right? And I remember learning about that in school. I also remember him just like discovering or inventing this thing called interchangeable parts, which made the Industrial Revolution possible in the first place, right? So you got this guy, Eli Whitney, interchangeable parts, the cotton gin, Industrial Revolution, and then you've got companies like DuPont who create things like dioxins, which are poisons that go in your rivers. Do a little Google search on that.
DuPont got big by making gunpowder for the Civil War, et cetera,
Right. So they're a great company of humanitarian efforts, right? So they're doing this to make wood pulp paper. So DuPont and Hearst and J.P. Morgan are like a triangle between the wood producer, the person who needs the paper for his newspapers, and the banker who funds it all. So you have J.P. Morgan, DuPont, and this guy Hearst. And they all conspire...
Andrew Mellon was in there as well, I believe.
Well, the point is that there's a closed circle, and that instead of using hemp paper, which lasts forever, they wanted to use wood pulp paper, which kills our trees, stimulates this thing called global warming, whatever that is, and puts a bunch of poison in our rivers, right? And empowers all these corporations and bankers. So you see this trifecta, and I have to note the history that in 1935 that these people got together and tried to overthrow FDR, and they went to this guy named Major General Smedley Butler, and they said, hey, we want to pay you to overthrow this country and take these 500,000 men and do it. Mm-hmm. This is why they were doing it. And when they couldn't do that through the business plot, a couple years later, they're like, we'll just make hemp illegal, and that gets the same aims done for them in that legislation, all through irrationality, I'm going to add.
Well, we'll speak more to the idea of irrationality controlling the fate of and control of hemp when we come back in this episode of Remedy Radio. What?
Are you rolling?
Yeah, we're rolling.
Oh, this will be spontaneous.
Okay.
You know what's not in the outline? Cana Bossum. And you know what made me think of it? The fact that your camera is sitting on top of the Peshitta Bible. The Holy Bible in the Aramaic. Check it out.
Chris Bennett from research shown in the 1930s by Sula Bennett, not any relation, has shown substantial evidence that the Cana Bossum of the Bible is actually cannabis. And I don't remember exactly which passage that's in. I do have
Chris's
book here within arm's reach, but... maybe two arms reach.
The Cana Bossum reference, it references it several times in the Bible. It pertains to going into the tent where they would create a bunch of smoke wherein Yahweh was found. And this is the whole origin of the Bible if you read it carefully and look up the words.
Yeah. Well, it seems that the reason religions were actually able to take control, and we'll not go off on this too much, but was through the use of these sacraments to create a religious experience. And it was the shamanistic priests who controlled the access and doling out of these psychedelics that could induce the religious experience, and that would somehow assert, you know, see, this is real.
It says in the Bible that Moses was initiated in the highest mysteries of the Egyptians. Mm-hmm. So Moses was a high priest with knowledge of these sacraments, and then he led a group of people, and there's a whole story to recount it. And it says all the time that they're going in and making this smoke and talking to Yahweh, but no one else is allowed to do it. It sounds a lot like prohibition of hemp, because you know the elites deal in these drugs. They're the ones who transport. I mean, this country was built on hemp and opium and tobacco, the most addictive substance on the planet from what the studies say. So we have to think about this. This is the origins of America, and the one good part about it is prohibited, and we're told it's an evil drug. And yet these other things can be made, you know, you can get it down the street any time of day or night.
Yeah, it's never actually killed anybody. They're just using it from a moral perspective, from a racial perspective, and it seems to be covering for these other interests who are really threatened, from oil to food to you know, textiles and on, and especially the medical industrial complex. They, you know, this whole thing is grown around patentable items that are all extracts from plants, whereas you can't patent a plant in its pure form, right? Like cannabis. So it's simply not profitable.
You wouldn't need DuPont's nylon and synthetic fibers and all these other things that they've patented as a result of having access to petroleum-based patents and things like this in the absence of hemp?
Exactly. Yeah.
It was funny that you should mention that, Rich. I used to live in Serbia, and in this area of Serbia, there used to be just massive amounts of hemp farming there, and a very large hemp industry producing, you know, fabrics and ropes and all kinds of different stuff from hemp there. And I believe the area was called. It may have been Bochka or Dutch or something like that. But what they did was to come in and put a synthetic chemical factory and a synthetics material factory right in the middle of this, well, basically right in the middle of the hemp fields. In fact, I have pictures of this big factory sitting in the middle of the hemp fields, but what happened is then you have a lot of the farmers leaving the fields and growing hemp, going in to get jobs in this chemical factory that's there to basically put the hemp farms out of business.
And that's indicative of just corporate dominance of any useful, less profitable substance on the planet. Because, again, we've got these profit models that are based on, you know, causing the most amount of trouble to cause the most amount of cleanup. You know what I mean? It's a make work, constant make work projects.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's important to touch upon the fact that, you know, all the founding fathers, even though many of them were Masons and slave owners, the ones who formulated this the country or this, you know, kind of continent that we, many of us live on, all used hemp either to grow, to imbibe, or to write upon, to write these ideas, many of which we do still subscribe to, today, on hemp paper. And so they certainly had no problem with this substance whatsoever. There was never a law enacted to prohibit or restrict it. In fact, there were many laws that were created to coerce and sometimes even force people to grow hemp on their land. But, you know, for the greater good or what have you. And there's several quotes. Maybe you guys can read off a few of them, or if you guys want to, you know, put your voice in read off a few from some of the founding fathers and the talk about hemp.
We shall by and by want a world of hemp more for our own consumption. John Adams. Thomas Jefferson's Farm Manual in 1791 says, hemp is the first necessity to the wealth and protection of the country. And then George Washington said, make the most of the hemp seed and sow it everywhere. So I'm unclear as to why we don't have this for a logical, rational reason. I'm clear on the irrationality of what happened in the 30s, but I'm unclear as to why people haven't figured this out yet.
And Rob, what did Henry Ford say? Because he made a car, apparently, out of hemp.
It says, why use up forests which were centuries in the making and the mines which required ages to lay down if we can get the equivalent of forests and mineral products in the annual growth of hemp fields?
And you were gonna mention about Henry Ford's car there, yeah?
Henry Ford made a car out of different composites to make plastic, including hemp resins. And, you know, there's photos available. In fact, a photo of it is available in Jack Hare's book. I think it's in the earlier editions. I'm not sure about the later ones, where you see Henry Ford there with a sledgehammer in below freezing weather, taking the sledgehammer to the back of the car and showing no damage.
So it wasn't Cheech and Chong that came up with the first hemp car?
No, it wasn't Cheech and Chong, and it, you know, it wasn't Saturn that came up with the first Psi composite dent resistant panels. That stuff came out 70, 80 years ago, actually. And then they banned hemp, and in fact, Standard Oil, who basically was behind the founding of Chevrolet, put gas lines in the original Chevrolet cars that would basically rot or melt if you used anything other than gasoline instead of like hemp ethanol. So, you know, Standard Oil was involved in promoting this type of stuff to really shut down this hemp plant and its many uses on many different levels.
Hmm. Well, Henry you mean Ford's that cars ran on something other than gasoline before sometime in the past? Is that what you're alluding to?
Well, not only did cars run on something other than gasoline, like ethanol and methanol, but we also had a significant number of electric cars back in the 1910s and 20s.
Back to that ethanol and methanol thing, could that sort of stuff be made from hemp?
It absolutely could be.
Yeah.
So at some point in the past, people ran their cars off of the alcohol produced from hemp. And then
from hemp and many, yeah, definitely hemp as well, but hemp is one of the fastest out of water growing plants other than, like, say, bamboo and other things, but it's one of the fastest out of water growing plants, and it can easily be converted into ethanol and methanol, and I believe it's Mobil Oil Company that owns a patent on converting methanol directly into gasoline.
Yeah, and all the cars that are built today could actually run on hemp alcohol. And hemp actually produces more alcohol than anything else. So, like, its production of oil.
There's algaes and things like that that'll produce more. But as far as, you know, on the land farming techniques and things, it far surpasses crops like corn and soy and all of these other crops that they claim are taking food out of people's mouths if we grow them and use them for biofuel, and, you know, artificially hyperinflating food prices, which is a big farce because none of the studies that I've looked at, in fact, there was one study that came out maybe 8 or 10 years ago from Cornell University saying that there was no plant solution for the biomass, fuel biomass problem. And you read through the study, and nowhere does it quote even their own previous studies done at Cornell University on hemp's diversity for crops and things like that. And I sent an email to the professor the researcher who wrote the article there at one point, and of course I never got a response. Why didn't she look at Cornell's own previous studies on industrial hemp for biomass and biofuel in her critique of the available biofuels out there today?
Well, that's indicative of how they like to kind of ignore the evidence that's out there. And when we come back, we'll talk about how they ignore the evidence of hemp as a useful health product. Did I say health product? Uh-oh. Is the FDA coming? All right, welcome back to this special episode, the special 420 episode of Remedy Radio. We've got our special guests here, Jan Urban and Richard Grove, and we're talking about how hemp is going to help save humanity as one of the major solutions that people need to either be more aware of or be talking about in an effective, responsible manner. So we're talking about hemp as a fuel source or the history of it. And we're going to talk about the health aspects and how hemp can be used as a food and as a medicine. So I was going to ask if one of you guys wanted to talk about maybe food and about medicine.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, as far as the food, hemp has the amino acids essential for human life. There's more amino acids, obviously, but for our essential development, it's got those. It's got a perfect balance of
essential fatty acids.
Thank you. Jeez. Okay, so it has a perfect balance of the essential fatty acids 3, 6, and 9, and so for that, it's a very good food source. And for medicinal purposes,
yeah, I mean, I've just been blown away by listening to all you guys talk about this stuff. The whole episode has just been extremely enlightening. In terms of medicinal stuff, from what I understand, it can help with pain. People who have cancer, people who have types of diseases that will inflict pain will often get minimized with using THC or marijuana. So in terms of the specifics of it, I'm not exactly clear. I think Jan would probably be able to answer that question, or Rich.
Well, it can also be, you know, it's used to control nausea for people with, with IBS or intestinal problems. It helps a lot with relaxing the stomach so that people can eat. With AIDS wasting syndrome, and I recommend people check out Peter Duesberg's work and stuff like that out there on AIDS. But anyway, regarding that, it helps fight against AIDS wasting syndrome. It helps fight against the nausea with cancer as well. Cannabinoids are, and I don't remember the exact cannabinoid. I do believe it's been pinpointed, but cannabinoids in marijuana or cannabis are the only substances known to date that can kill cancer cells while protecting healthy living cells. And research is being done by Dr. Robert Malamede at the he's the chairman of the biology department at the University of Colorado, and he's been conducting research on cannabinoids and cancer. Rick Simpson should not go unmentioned, and he's a Canadian that's basically been on the run for his work regarding teaching people about how to cure their own cancer with his Rick Simpson hemp oil. And I've got in front of me, and I'll send it to you guys so you can post it to the notes for this show, but I've got a list of about 20 different cancer studies, THC and cancer up to 2008, and that's not including the last 2 or 3 years worth. So I've got about 20 studies here showing the efficacy of cannabinoids on THC from Professor Guzman, pilot clinical study of delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol in patients with recurrent glioblastoma multiforme, and that's from the British Journal of Cancer, and there's numerous other studies here, all basically talking about different types of cancer, from brain tumors to skin cancer being treated with cannabinoid extracts.
Mm-hmm. And I think, since you mentioned Rick Simpson, that it's important people check out his there's films of him online, Run from the Cure, and there's a couple other videos of him talking, giving presentations, and other people who've actually tried the hemp oil recipe that he's put out there on themselves, and they've documented their own process. Mm-hmm. And put that online. And for those who aren't aware, Google Video is taking down like all their videos in the next like 8 or 9 days. So, and a lot of these, like Rick Simpson's work and the Peter Duesberg documentary on AIDS, they're all going to be gone. So it's important that you get out there and download these things and re-upload them on YouTube and Blip TV and Vimeo and preserve this information, because, you know, if Google will argue that they're just, you know, making more space for more YouTube stuff, but a huge crap ton of documentaries that are really amazing, that are full length, are going to be gone off the internet in the next 2 weeks. So
the power's in your hands to forward the message.
Absolutely. So yeah, a lot of the use of hemp and hemp oil and cannabis as a medicine today is almost you have to guinea pig with yourself and find what dosage works for you, and because our governments continue to make it illegal, even though it you can't take a high enough dose to kill yourself, essentially. You can fall asleep, and that's about it. You might get delirious.
You can get really high.
Yeah, you get really high, and you might think that you feel like you're dying, but that's called a religious experience. That's a whole other episode. I think maybe we'll just transition into one of the more useful elements of hemp in how it can help save humanity, and that's as a fuel source. You know, people can argue that electric and water power are definitely better for traveling, but in terms of like generating power or using a renewable resource that can help generate power in certain forms, hemp is certainly useful as a fuel. So maybe you guys can talk about that.
Well, I mean, if you look at the problems that plague people today, like the status quo problems, people talk about this thing called global warming. I don't know if global warming is true or not true. I tend not to believe things that I can't validate for myself, and there's not enough evidence for me to change my position on that. Having that said, it's still retarded to make paper out of trees. It's still unconscionable that hemp is prohibited when you could make all these things non-toxically. You wouldn't be cutting down our forests, therefore there couldn't be a CO2 problem, because planting hemp everywhere eats CO2 and, you know, produces oxygen, which humans need to leave. It's called a symbiotic system. So if there's too much CO2 and we're cutting down rainforests and all these growth forest trees, all these forests full of hundreds and hundreds of years of growth that can't be replaced immediately, then you have to reconsider and start looking at the root cause. And it's like, why are we cutting down trees to make paper again? Because the paper fades away and it's got acid in it and it produces all these toxins and all these other things. So when you look at it, it's nonsensical that we're not using the best type of paper to formulate our ideas and preserve them for the future. Rather, it seems like they gave us this paper that wastes away into dust in 100 years so that we can't have a history of ourselves, because that seems to be an MO that's gone on through history, right? And so when you look at how these laws have changed, and when you have companies, lumber companies like Weyerhaeuser, and most people who have a house built by any sort of corporation have to get their lumber from Weyerhaeuser, right? That's a skull and bones family. So when you have these large families with these networks that are buying into the lumber industry, and then they own the paper making industry, and then they own the production of publications, newspapers and magazines and multimedia and all this stuff, through the 1900s and the 20th century, that is control of the mind of people. And if people just got back to a little bit of reality and understood that there is a single plant that can provide a multitude of solutions, first of all, dealing with what you think is a problem, global warming, making that go away so you can see the real problems. The real problems are that you're using words to make laws to prohibit things that then put human actions in juxtaposition, like direct conflict with human needs of survival. And we're all killing ourselves because we can't literally understand what's going on and why things are the way they are, which is why we kind of invest our time on something like this, so we can get to the bottom of this and figure it out and learn our way forward.
And you have to get over.
Well, I was going to say, and to that end, a lot of people will demonize and say that that's impossible if you smoke weed or you use cannabis in any way a
shamanic sense.
Sure, any kind of sense that's not like you're not wearing it, let's say. So if you're using THC to get high, people will say you're just trying to escape reality. How do you?
But then what's an antidepressant? What's someone who drinks alcohol?
That's even then, though, it's like, and then you have to define what is reality. But it's like our whole society are people who are basically being misled and controlled by the media and by politicians and marketing and public relations firms and all of these things. And certainly that, and living in that sort of lifestyle, being mind controlled literally, I don't see that as living in any sort of reality whatsoever. That's living in a marketing corporate delusional world. So is it that which is which here? Does one take you out of reality or put you actually into it, right?
That's a good question.
Right.
Well, let's look at petroleum production, because with the prohibition of hemp, you have companies that are skull and bones owned companies that own the patents to crack the petroleum molecule, and because of that, they do a standardization on gasoline around the world and oil that our military and everything else runs on. Right now, it's all on petrochemicals, and that is literally poisoning the planet. The whole process of producing that and gaining the land from other people who have the rights over the oil or whatever resources are there, in order so we can drive our SUVs and stuff like that, is oxymoronic when everyone could be growing hemp, producing alcohol, running your automobile on alcohol, just like they did 100 and some years ago, and demand that these changes be put back in place. Because as long as we are all dependent on gasoline and traditionally produced electricity from nuclear power plants, we're all at risk, right?
Absolutely. And we'll talk more about how hemp is going to help save the planet when we come back. And we're back on Remedy Radio, this special episode, 420 episode, with special guests Jan Urban and Richard Grove. And we're talking about hemp as a fuel source and how hemp can literally save humanity by fulfilling the needs that have been warped by these greedy corporate interests and the kind of secret societies helping to coordinate them, I guess. So, Rich, you were mentioning that, you know, we're going to other countries and stealing their resources when none of this would be necessary if we were just growing enough hemp at home, which we've conveniently made illegal, which completely works against all our own financial, energy, food, fuel, and clothing interests, and production interests even. So,
Think about this. What is the logic of growing grass in your yard and cutting it every week? I mean, it's an English tradition that came from people who had slaves who could afford to go roll their lawn and then take little scissors and go out and cut it, because they had slaves to do this. And it was a sign of being rich that you didn't have to grow your own food or fiber on your land. So what do we have today? We have a bunch of people who want to be like their slave master class, and they emulate them, when we could all be growing hemp in our yards and growing our own gold. Literally, and you could take it to a community hemp processing center and people will be employed. Everybody will be able to make their own income, right? This is not for everybody, but there's a lot of people out of work. And I think that we need to start taking the solutions that are on the table and saying, hey, why isn't this on the table? Because I'm looking over there and I see hemp, and that could be the solution to all these problems on this table, right? So we start asking these questions, and you can start growing your own plants. And this puts you back in touch with nature and maybe a little bit less TV time, because you're out practicing some horticulture, growing some real grass, right? And that can provide food for your community, can provide fuel for your vehicle, it can provide fiber for your clothes, and it wouldn't be hard to take your hemp down the street into the processing center, and then some people out of there are getting jobs as weavers and they're making textiles, and some other people become tailors, and all of a sudden we all have custom clothes that'll last 100 years. Instead of these things that are being made by slaves on the other side of the world, and they're falling apart after a couple of times through the washer and dryer. That's all driving somebody else's profit model, and it doesn't profit any of us to participate in that. So I'm confused why more people haven't caught on to this, but maybe sharing some of these perspectives will get some people to think about what's really going on out there and how they're being controlled through things that you can't really control, like your need to transport yourself to get a job.
Absolutely. And most importantly, as we're seeing with the foreclosures, our need to live in a place that is decent and affordable and increasingly sustainable. So I thought it was interesting, because I had just been informed about a building material that's kind of like a hempcrete that uses cannabis or hemp stock as one of the main building materials, and that it's like super powerful. So maybe
it's called, in French, it's known as isochanvre, and it comes from mixing hemp herds and limestone and lime together, and it petrifies. Basically, you mix it with water and it petrifies. And there are bridges in areas of France and other parts of Europe that are more than 800 years old that are still usable today that are made from this process. There's a waiting list in France to get on a list to have a new home built with isochanvre today, because it's got great insulating properties. It's very strong. It's about 8 or 10 times lighter and stronger than your typical cement, and just as good for construction and building and things like that.
as cement. I don't know if it could be used in something like say a skyrise, but certainly on 2 and 3 story homes, it's been used for many centuries. And it's just another one of those things. I think there is a small market for companies in the U.S. now that are either importing the hemp herds from either Canada or China that are building on a small scale some hemp or isochamber homes here.
Cool.
Well, I think it's important to mention also that the reason that it makes such strong masonry or concrete like hempcrete is because of the length of the fiber, and the hemp plant has the longest fibers of any plant in the world, thus making what you make out of it, whether it's rope or canvas or hempcrete or any of these things, the strongest of its variety of materials.
Or American flags.
Yeah.
Right.
And Bibles.
And Bibles.
And Bibles.
The Gutenberg Bibles were printed on hemp originally.
And the Drafts Declaration of the Independence and the Constitution and the clothes that the people who signed all those things were wearing.
Basically, anyone who wants something to last makes it out of hemp. But if they want, what is it called?
Planned obsolescence.
Then they make it out of anything but hemp. And then they can sell you more crap after your stuff turns to crap. Speaking of cleaning up crap, I know Chernobyl, which was a huge nuclear disaster in the 1980s, 86 to be specific, that they used some form of hemp or a hemp byproduct to help clean that up. And so since it's a very relevant issue today with the Japanese nuclear disaster, and we on the West Coast are, concerned about rain deation, how would hemp apply in this case, do you think? Or how did it apply with Chernobyl?
Well, in the case of Chernobyl, you can do a simple Google search, hemp plus Chernobyl, but I think the title of the article is Hemp Eats Chernobyl Waste or something to that effect. And Chernobyl happened in 1986, for those who might not have been born back then. And afterwards is the most toxic disaster of human history, which has now been surpassed most recently by something everyone knows about, is the Japanese disaster. Something like hempcrete could have been used in Japanese structures that would give them a stronger tolerance to earthquakes. And if hemp was being grown everywhere, we wouldn't have such a demand to produce something that is radiologically like toxic to humanity for the next 100,000 years, being the fuel which the fuel which makes the water boil and turn the turbine and make the electricity, which is the same technology they had 100 years ago. Only now we poison ourselves as the process of doing that. Right, so the irrationality of that whole situation aside, what you have is the ability for things to be created out of hemp that aren't being created out of hemp because everything has been prohibited around the world. All these countries, like the Japanese right after World War II, had to sign a treaty that in order to have peace and not get messed up by war anymore, they have to also not grow hemp, because that's part of doing business with the United States, is they demand that you not grow hemp. So in the case of Chernobyl, what they found was they could plant hemp in those areas that were otherwise off limits and humans can't go in there. You can plant hemp. The process is called phytoremediation, and the hemp stalks take all these, has deep roots, which helps to restore the soil and pull the strontium and cesium and all these other toxins out of the soil and up into the stalks of the plant, where then you can go disperse the plant in a safe way where it's protected because it's been integrated into the plant and it's no longer as dangerous to human beings as it was before. And it makes that land reusable. So if there's an accident in Japan that's going on, then this has to be part of the solution if there's a real solution. And unfortunately, we're controlled by gangsters who aren't interested in providing us with solutions, which is why it's prohibited. But that's just my opinion.
And they make everyone who uses it out to look like they're some kind of gangster.
Right.
Or it's all bizarro world. So,
we don't want to do anything based on logic and common sense. We have to, we have to do the most irrational thing that generates the most profit in the free market system to
That's a fallacy. There's never been a free market system.
Typically, that seems to be the angle that's taken, is the most absurd and least logical direction that generates the most profit for the most shareholders of this and that company is the so-called solution that's chosen instead of the most obvious, whether it's the Gulf oil spill or Chernobyl or Fukushima, you know?
Well, and not for nothing, but in this book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes, which you can get for free online at jackharrah.com, it has the transcript, the congressional transcript where Harry J. Anslinger, the drug czar, goes through and tries to demonstrate why marijuana, hemp, all these things should be illegal. And it's totally racist. And you can read the transcript, and once you read that transcript, you can set yourself free from the fallacy of believing everything that we've been told in school up through, you know, Nancy Reagan's Just Say No BS campaign.
Yeah, we just believe in all the different hoopla that's essentially broadcast out there, because it's put out there enough that even people who've never come across cannabis, never tried it, never interacted or never knowingly interacted with any of its byproducts, that they can live in this kind of bubble where it's like the plant never existed, like it's always been this harmful thing. And they have to create a total tunnel vision in order to avoid the abundant history that's out there if you're interested in looking at it. So, you know, if you find the idea of cannabis and hemp, you know, that's drug stuff, or that's hippie stuff, or that's whatever, you know, you kind of have to get over that.
It's called growing up.
Yeah, you have to try considering something without judging it, you know what I mean? And I don't mean try, like, imbibing it, just try researching it. So we'll come back after this quick break and be in our final segment of Remedy Radio and kind of talk about, you know, the summation of these solutions and where you can find more information. So sit tight and be right back. All right, thanks for staying with us on this final segment of Remedy Radio, our special 420 episode, and with our special guests, Jan Irvin and Richard Grove. We're talking about how hemp can save humanity and the many, many solutions we talked about through this whole episode are just kind of the surface of what can be many areas of research for you. So I think it'd be cool to talk about sources where people can look further at this and any other pertinent info that, you know, helps reverse this kind of negative association that anything to do with cannabis still seems to suffer.
Well, we've already talked about Jack Harrah's book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes. I also recommend Chris Conrad's book, Hemp, Lifeline to the Future. Richard showed Chris's other book earlier, Hemp for Health, there. There's also, I run the hempforfuel.com website. That's either the number 4-O or F-O-R. Either one will get you there, hempforfuel.com. There are, you know, I would just recommend going out and you know, looking at these books, do a Google search out there on hemp and look at all the information out there that's available. And like I said earlier, I'll send you the links for Dr. Robert Malamede and others' research on using marijuana or cannabis extracts, cannabinoids for treating cancer and protecting the healthy cells. Canada, in fact, is probably the world's largest producer and exporter of hemp foods. So,
and we still have people that are ignorant of hemp here.
Here, yeah.
Like, what is hemp? And you know, it just blows me away of how little people know about this thing called
hemp. Well, every bit of hemp foodstuffs that's on practically every health food store in this country, and even a lot of non-health food stores, all of those food products are all coming out of Canada.
Yeah.
And not to knock the Canadians, but, you know, these are products that we could also be producing here in the United States.
Exactly.
And there's no reason for anybody to be importing or exporting any of this stuff. We should all be able to raise it for ourselves as foodstuffs, as, you know, people have done for thousands of years. But, you know, there's
a lot of special interests,
government in the way,
making cannabis illegal on the many different levels, so that people can't make their own clothing. It's like the old stories when they first started outlawing hemp in New York and Chicago and places like this. They would go to these Polish families who would have hemp growing in their yards, and they would demand that they would that they cut down the hemp plants, and they would. The Polish would come out with shotguns and say, "Hey, you're not stealing my winter clothes," you know. And this is the reality of it: is people back then knew how to grow and make weave their own clothes right in the vicinity of their own house.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and now it's we import clothes from China from slave labor. You know, for you know, it's ridiculous. And certainly today, with technology and things, we could be growing and processing hemp at home, and I'm sure much better ways than they were doing, you know, 100 years ago.
Yeah, no doubt. So it seems that logic, logic and reason don't seem to be as profitable a model as, you know, having stuff that falls apart.
Well, I think I can speak to that. I think I know what the issue with that is, because as many people have pointed out, most people don't actually use cannabis. So the delusion, the commonly held delusion that's being held, is by people that don't actually use cannabis. And
correct.
Most of the people that I know that have used cannabis in any fashion,
they seem to see
through the delusion. People call them
unmotivated. Not all of them. I've known some people that have actually reverted back after some propaganda feeding, but
it's
rare.
But yeah, but for a large part, you know, most of those people seem to see through the delusion, and they're called unmotivated. And it's like, well, no, I just see the bullshit, and so I'm just not motivated to partake in the bullshit.
Or, you know, another one that I've heard is, like, if anybody studies about what's going on in the world, a common ad hominem will be, oh, you must sit around at home homeless with, you know, smoking pot, you know. It, you know, it's like, okay, so don't focus any of your attention on this research, on the facts that are being presented. Let's focus on making ad hominem accusations about whether or not you have a job and whether or not you happen to use cannabis.
Right. And yet they would probably be hypocritical in an argument that if you sat home and researched all day but you were drinking coffee, that it would be perfectly okay.
Hey,
or
man,
if you're smoking chain smoking cigarettes as you drank coffee all day, that would be okay,
because
those people need
more
drugs. Yeah, absolutely, which provably kills millions more people.
What you're saying sounds like out of a book, all right? Sounds scripted. That's it is.
No, I just think it's important that people get out there, get over some of their hang-ups, you know, realize that even though hemp and cannabis, they're the same plant, and they're different elements, and, you know, this plant has had many, many, many more uses than just being about getting high. That's the first hurdle you have to get over. It's not about being a drug. It's a plant first, where you can extract a drug from it. So as long as people understand that, they can go off in many different directions of research, and you know, when you're looking at global warming or any of these environmental issues, you can tell if someone's genuine or not if they're mentioning hemp. If they're not mentioning hemp, they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, because the bottom line is there's a lot of big problems in the world. But fortunately, once you learn about hemp, you see that hemp can fit in as a solution in all of these areas where it has already through history been proven. It's not speculation.
It's a great track record.
It was working until it was prohibited, and all of a sudden the world goes kaflooey. So I'm just saying, observe the obvious and get past that, and then get yourself to jackharrer.com, read the book for free online. If you want a hard copy, buy a copy of the book. And then after that, you can visit tragedyandhope.com, and we've got a group that's designated to look at the issue of hemp and pull all the information together so we can better understand and figure out how to make this solution enacted instead of just the potential.
If there's other stuff people want to check out, then, you know, just Googling Jack Harrer's name. You can Google YouTube his name, Google The Emperor Wears No Clothes, you'll find the book, and I'm sure there's many editions available.
There's no shortage of information right now.
Yeah, no, it's a huge abundance, but you just have to, again, have the open mind to search for it. And, you know, anybody who's propagandizing against hemp or any of its derivatives. You have to look at what their motives and intentions are. The medical industry obviously has
or if they're just propagandized themselves and not seeing the bigger picture.
Absolutely.
As well. Sorry to interrupt you there.
No, people will. They are prone to repeat the propaganda if it sounds believable, right? And, you know, there's a huge influx of cannabis use in media culture, but it's none of it is positive stereotype reinforcement. It's almost all stoners or demotivated, you know, goofy people or, you know, silliness, and none of it's put in an enlightenment fashion. None of it's put in a shamanic tradition. None of it's shown as a true medicine.
Just put in a bad light.
Yeah, it's just put in a bad light to reinforce that stereotype. And separate it from, you know, it's a youthful thing, it's an indiscretion, you know, a drug type thing experience. And so it's, you know, it's important to see through that kind of social culturalized propaganda as well.
Because you don't want people to be able to control their own pain. You don't want people to self-medicate with marijuana. Things might get out of hand. Oh wait, that's the pharmaceutical industry that got out of hand, and they're poisoning us, and now even our water supply has Prozac and all these other psychotropic drugs in it.
Yeah.
Right? So I think people should just keep it real and do some homework and have a happy 420. And,
have a happy 420.
We can all grow together each year.
Yeah, we're not beacons of wisdom here. We're just learning through this stuff together.
Yeah. We're just learning our way through the journey. So yeah, everyone have a happy 420. And
happy 420.
Have a 420.
No, thanks guys. Smoke on Boston. Peace. Peace. 420. All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, that's a wrap?
Yeah, that is a riggedy wrap.
Cool.
What are you picking?
Early spring veggies. We got some Swiss chard, a few different kinds of kales, but this is real early in the season.
Yeah. Alright.
Survival.
What are we gonna put that stuff in?
We're gonna make a 420 special, green smoothie, everyday special.
Looking good.
Starts on the inside. We're here in the Remedy Kitchen. Some of the things you're going to need for your remedy and for things that are going to improve your lifestyle and your life from the inside are a high-speed blender. We have a Vitamix here, a dehydrator, which is a really good and essential tool while you're making raw food. And we have our crock pot here. This is one of the things we use that's cooked. We make our herbal remedies in there. We have that kind of on the go all the time. So, today what we're going to make is a green smoothie. We've got some Swiss chard, some collards, and three different kinds of kale here, black, green, and red kale. This is a red Bartlett pear. One of the things that we like to have is a pear. We've got some lemon, hemp, and apple. Cider, apple juice, whatever you like. Some people like orange juice. We prefer apple. So anyway, what we'll do here is we cut up all our greens. Let the... give the blender a little bit of help. This will bind up. If you don't have a high-speed blender, you're probably going to want to try and cut this up really fine to start off, because even with these blenders, if you don't cut it up first, it will bind them up. But that's the beauty of this, and this why what makes this so good is that you get to eat greens, and the blender does the chewing for you, because
we, unlike cows, don't chew that much. We don't have all those extra stomachs to prepare all this stuff for us, digest it all, so we don't get it all. So anyway, you just stick all that in there. We even had a few strawberry leaves, fresh strawberry leaves that were in there. So that goes in there. Take your hair and cut that a little bit more. Oops. Then, apple juice. Apple cider. Blend that up first. Start slow. Speed it up quickly. Lovers out there.
All right.
Morning, Adam, you're in.
Who wants green smoothie?
Me.
Mustache.
Hey.
Cheers, everybody. Happy 420.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Might need a little bit of blending.
Yeah, I know. So your size of the big chunk of kale going on. Like,
I'm not going to blow the take.
Take those out in post.
Adam, yeah.
When you say,
Adam,
well, I think we should, you can take that right out. So it's like, well, I think we should.
Yeah, I can take it out. You know? I can take out the audio.
Adam,
yeah.
Watch this, Adam.
Yeah, do too, buddy.
The heart's always the truer place, so remember that.
It just gets confusing when you start to come from your head.